A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 107. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Doomwatch. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Doomwatch, a hard-hitting series, which is all about the dangers of uncontrolled science and a team that has to look into this.
Yes, that's right. It was a BBC series that ran for 3 years in the early 1970s, 72 through 74. They produced a total of 36 episodes running about 50 minutes each. And some of those episodes are missing, unfortunately. 14 episodes are missing. But it is a classic series that was influential, and it is certainly very well known and well remembered.
Yes, absolutely. It's a big series from the BBC in the 1970s, and it looked at all sorts of elements, cutting edge of science, bringing into that ecological and environmental concerns, using the impact of scientific developments and scientific research as the background to some sort of action stories as well. So lots of stuff going on in this series.
Yes, this, among other things, was sort of almost a showcase for 1970s environmentalism and various concerns, and got into sort of a bit of political drama and that kind of thing as well. So there's some interesting stuff there.
So the setup, we have the rather impressively named Department for the Observation and Measurement of Scientific Work, which is an organization set up by the government, and the government has done that to reassure the public about the dangers of new science, and they've done that during an election campaign. And the department very quickly comes to be nicknamed Doomwatch, so much so that the actual members of the team call themselves Doomwatch throughout the series. So that's the basis for this organization.
And the idea here was that it was really set up by the government as a publicity exercise and sort of an electioneering technique to try to gather votes by saying that, yes, we will have a group of scientists to monitor the scientists and the science that's being done out there. And they did create the organization, and rather than it being just a showpiece and not really doing anything, they ended up with a leader of the organization who had a conscience and was very competent and made it a very real and powerful organization.
Yes, absolutely. The chap who runs it really sort of takes this organization and makes it really important. And so we have this Doomwatch organization, which is a team of dedicated scientists, and they research cases and look at new developments. And as we've said, they look at these environmental threats, ecological disasters, nuclear, biological, all sorts of threats to humanity. Lots of science up on the screen for us to look at.
That's right. And the work they do often brings them into conflict with government ministers and different parts of the government, the people they report to, because there are various secret government projects and government projects that maybe have been covered up or just sort of slipped into the background. But there are various things that the government has done that Doomwatch is concerned with. There are also things that private companies have done that Doomwatch is concerned with, but that the government doesn't want those organizations to be interfered with for political reasons, economic reasons, and so on. So there is definitely a political dance going on with Doomwatch and the people they report to.
Yes, and it is an interesting dance because, as you say, Brian, Doomwatch has been set up almost as a publicity exercise, and then it becomes very real. And actually, you know, we get this tension between them and the government that created them. So interesting stuff as the show goes along. We've got the team we've talked about, and in particular, we've got the leader with a conscience, and this is the character Dr. Spencer Quist, who was played by the actor John Paul. And Quist is a Nobel Prize-winning scientist. He's, as we've suggested already, he's a very imposing, he's a very sort of serious team leader. He's a tough talker. He doesn't take any nonsense. And as we've said, he's got a conscience, and he's perhaps also, he's got rather a sort of guilty conscience in a way, because he, we learn, was involved in the Manhattan Project. And we learn at some point in the series that Quist's wife actually died of radiation poisoning because she was working with him. And this weighs heavily on his conscience, and that sort of drives him on to make Doomwatch a very real organisation and prevent the sort of threats that perhaps he was involved in his early career.
Yes, Quist is someone who does not back down. I think never backs down from anything, basically. And he is a force to be reckoned with. And when he goes up against the politicians and the minister and so on, he very often, or almost always, comes out with at least a partial victory, because this is someone who has a big and important name, very well known, and someone who is just very capable and intelligent and does not back down. So he was really someone who drives this whole organization. There are other important characters as well. Dr. John Ridge, played by Simon Oates, handles some of the investigative aspects of the cases. He has a background in espionage. It's not exactly clear what that background is. He has a bit of a James Bond kind of character, is sort of a little flamboyant, an eye for the ladies and so on. And he clashes with Quist, and they often argue, but they develop this good working relationship as well. And he is a major asset to Quist, in some cases as a scientist as well, but often as a sort of investigator.
Yeah, the relationship between Quist and Ridge is one of the very strong points of the Doomwatch show, I think, Brian. This sort of grudging respect they have for each other, which sort of drives some conflict in the team, but produces results. It's very well done, I think.
Yes, it was.
So then we have another character, Toby Wren, played by a very young Robert Powell, an early television role for him. Toby Wren is a young chemist who we see joining Doomwatch in the very first episode, and he's immediately thrown into the action. And it's quite interesting because Doomwatch made Robert Powell a bit of a star, I think. You know, he was young, charismatic, handsome, and he was one of the sort of stars of the early part of Doomwatch.
We also had Colin Bradley there, played by Joby Blanchard, who was a plain-talking laboratory scientist who did a lot of sort of lab work at Doomwatch headquarters, didn't go out on investigations and things very much, but did a lot of the hard science and did a lot of work with the computer. You know, this was early 1970s, and they had a big, for the time, very powerful computer in Doomwatch that is sort of a key part of many of their investigations. They're doing modeling different things on it and so on, and he is always the one working with that and doing some of the hard science as well, although the other characters do some of the science work back at headquarters as well.
Yes, he does seem to end up doing most of the work back in the lab, doesn't he?
Quite a bit of it, yes.
Yeah.
Especially as the series moved on.
Yeah. In the first series, we had a character, Pat Honeysett, who was the team secretary, played by the actress Wendy Hall. Perhaps a bit of a misstep in the casting, I think, or at least in the early episodes, because she was very much just the token female in the team, mainly seemed to be there to be the butt of sort of comments and jokes from the rather flamboyant Dr. John Ridge. And I think perhaps they reacted to that by introducing some stronger female characters in later series of Doomwatch that we'll perhaps talk about later.
Yes, when we get to the characters that were introduced later, we will talk about how that was handled, and there was definitely a bit of a shift there. The minister was played by John Barron, who we talked about in Time Slip. He is the boss for them, and often he is something of an antagonist or someone they have to negotiate with, because he is often someone who knows about or is involved with some of these other government projects that become problems, or he has to toe the line of protecting various other organizations and companies, be it for economic reasons or political reasons and so on. And he especially is a major character in the second series, where a lot of these sort of political issues tend to come to the fore.
One more reference to lead in petrol, and I think I will join Dr. Ridge in seclusion.
You can't be serious.
Perfectly serious. Test showed a reduced activity of ALA dehydrase.
ALA?
Aminolive linic acid.
Stafford?
An enzyme specially sensitive to lead.
Thank you. A reduction that's enough to suggest that when he went berserk, he was suffering from acute lead poisoning.
But if this is the case, why isn't it happening all over the place?
How do we know that it isn't?
With respect, Sir George, Dr. Quist didn't refer to lead in petrol.
What then?
There could be another cause or a contributing cause.
But what? Don't prevaricate.
Ridge did a fair bit of welding. He did it in a confined space, not always taking precautions.
Okay, so
he
we've got the episodes of Doomwatch, well, which are sort of standalone episodes, but as we'll discuss, there are some themes that sort of continue throughout the series. So let's talk a little bit about some of the stories, and we'll start right at the beginning with the first episode, which was called The Plastic Eaters, which starts with a plane crash in South America, and Doomwatch find out that this crash may be linked to the development of a plastic solvent which has some sort of viral properties to spread. And so we've got this young chemist who's joined the team, Toby Wren, who's immediately sent off to investigate the crash site. And that sort of sets us off and running, I think, Brian, with the start of the show. We get this quick introduction to Doomwatch and the team, and they're away.
Yes, the series really hits the ground running. You get Ridge's espionage involved in there, and Quist and Bradley doing some research, and we find out that some of the things that Wren was doing, you know, that he went and he was taking samples and taking them onto another flight to get home. So perhaps another flight is being put in danger as they're figuring out what's going on. And they do some interesting things with that. And the visuals in that were quite powerful, what they did with the airplane and the melting and dissolving plastic. Interesting episode for sure.
Yeah, it's a very good start to the series. It really sort of kicks it off with literally a bang.
Yes. Just a few episodes later, episode 4 was Tomorrow the Rat, where Doomwatch investigates a series of attacks on people, and they discover gradually that it looks like they are being attacked by rats. And these rats are becoming immune to some common poisons and things that people are using to kill rats.
Yeah, that's right. The rats are becoming immune, and in the process, they may also be evolving into something much more deadly. And again, it's a quite gripping investigation for Doomwatch, and the episode features some quite nasty and scary moments, which are well done. Unfortunately, the episode also does feature this one moment of a rat attack, which features some rather dodgy on-stage special effects, which don't work quite so well, Brian, and they sort of like being humorously commented on over the years.
Yes, unfortunately, that was a bit of a weak point in that episode. It might have been nice if they had used the approach that was used in the series Beasts that we talked about, where the rats are never seen. You just sort of hear their presence and that sort of thing.
Yes, that's right. It worked much better there.
Yes. However, it was a very interesting episode and got into these ideas of the rats becoming more aggressive and more powerful and deadly, and these ideas that when we eliminate the rats that we can eliminate with these poisons and things, we end up making the problem worse by selecting for the traits that we don't want.
Yeah, very interesting.
Now, the impact of Doomwatch is quite interesting. Kit Pedler and Jerry Davis created Doomwatch. We'll talk about that a little more. They prided themselves on how many of the Doomwatch storylines were followed by sort of similar types of events happening in real life, because they covered nuclear incidents and antibiotic resistance and the dangers of computing and medicine, chromosome abnormalities, issues of lead and gasoline, these types of things. So it was something that by some measure they were ahead of their time in some of the ideas, which was quite nice.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, that now Doomwatch has sort of become an accepted term for any environmental watchdog. And, you know, it was certainly at the time, it was on the television. It was before we'd got Friends of the Earth active here in the UK. I mean, so, you know, quite early environmental impact stuff on the BBC, all covered by Doomwatch. And as you said, they sort of prided themselves on how many news stories they were able to point to later on, which they'd already covered in the series. And you can find out more information about that and some of the newspaper articles on a fan site about Doomwatch called doomwatch.org, which is an excellent resource and worth going there to check out some of this stuff.
Yes, of course, some of these things were being done on Doomwatch in 1972, and certainly a lot of the big environmental issues and things were starting then, but a lot of these things happened later than that. And also, Doomwatch certainly did have an impact and an influence on other science fiction, other different kinds of fiction, different kinds of television, and so on.
Yeah, it's all good stuff. And as you say, you know, the people who created it really sort of like tapping into something that's almost ahead of its time and an interesting sort of vein of stories.
Absolutely. Speaking of which, we should get into our production notes here. Jerry Davis was a script editor on Doctor Who in the late 1960s. And he met Kit Pedler, who was a scientific advisor on Doctor Who and a medical scientist. He worked with electron microscopy and also wrote science fiction. And it was from there that Jerry Davis and Kit Pedler started working together and became a very interesting team.
Yeah, an interesting partnership, as you say, formed on Doctor Who. And they had this interest together in what the impacts of science and scientific development would be on human life and how we would interact with science. And in particular, they worked together to write the Doctor Who serial, The Tenth Planet, which, of course, was the last serial for the first Doctor, and introduced a couple of important elements into the Doctor Who mythos, Brian.
Yes, it of course did introduce regeneration, but possibly more importantly, introduced the Cybermen. Kit Pedler and Jerry Davis created the Cybermen with this idea of there being people who decided to be more robust and more able to withstand the pressures of their lives and so on, and sort of very adverse conditions. And these people replaced parts of their body with technological components. And eventually, through this process, they lost what made them human and lost emotion and compassion and so on. And this was the original idea of the Cybermen. And they came up with that, the two of them, and wrote The Tenth Planet. They also suggested other storylines for the Cybermen, which were used for later serials, including Tomb of the Cybermen and The Invasion in the late 60s.
So we've got this useful partnership of Jerry Davis and Kit Pedler. And after working on Doctor Who together, they decided to produce a series for the BBC which would look at the different threats that science posed for mankind. And they took the idea for this series to another sort of important name from British science fiction in the 70s. They took it to Terence Dudley, who would produce all three series of Doomwatch, and he would also go on to write and direct episodes himself as well. And we've encountered Terence Dudley before, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. He would go on to produce Survivors for the BBC, and also went on to write for Doctor Who in the 80s. And he always insisted that Doomwatch was not science fiction, but instead was fiction about science fact, which is an interesting point of view. I felt that it really does sit as science fiction, but it's an interesting point of view.
Yeah, it's another one of those sorts of shows that are just on the edges, really. I mean, we talked about this when we discussed 11th Hour, which does owe quite a bit to Doomwatch in a way, as to whether it's science fiction or just fiction about science.
Yes, I think Doomwatch is more solidly science fiction than 11th Hour was. I think 11th Hour pushed to that boundary a little bit closer, but there definitely were some very similar ideas in those shows.
Okay, so for Doomwatch, we've got three series, as we said, 1972, 1973, and 1974. we've got yet again another very impressive music and credits sequence, so that each episode has a pre-credits teaser, which I think was quite unusual for the time, although we're much more used to that now. And then it would be followed by some music written by Max Harris, a very bombastic piece of music with some disturbing images of explosions and static on our screens and the flashing up words, Doomwatch. So again, another impressive title sequence, Brian.
Yes, that one visually was very powerful. They had a couple of images of mushroom clouds in there, which were pretty powerful.
Yeah. Gripping and scary stuff.
Yes. So I think that brings us to the end of the first half of our discussion on Doomwatch. Next time, we will be talking about some of the changes in the second and third series. There definitely were some changes, characters and direction and so on.
Yes. Also, we're going to talk about spin-offs from Doomwatch, and we've got quite a few here to talk about, plus our favorite episodes, and to discuss how you can watch some of this very important show yourself. So lots of stuff to talk about when we come back next time.
Yes, this show is not as easily available as some, unfortunately. It's a little hard to get a hold of, but we will certainly talk about that. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to your company again next time. Until then, Eamon in England saying goodbye.